Chapter 2. The Crime Scene. 1. Bruce, who had absolutely no experience with a chainsaw, quickly yielded the tool to Nick, who had at least held one before. It took them 10 minutes to figure out how to start the damn thing, but Nick was soon rampaging around the backyard, slicing up even the thinnest of limbs and branches. Bruce followed at a safe distance and gathered the debris. He was tossing some limbs into a pile when a Santa Rosa policeman appeared from nowhere. Bruce signaled, and Nick reluctantly shut down the chainsaw. Another one could be heard in the distance. The officer introduced himself and, after a few minutes of storm talk, said,
"There are some fatalities, sorry to say. Looks like most were on the north end."
Bruce nodded and wanted to know what this had to do with him. The officer went on,
"Your friend, Nelson Kerr, took a head wound and didn't make it."
"Nelson?" Bruce said in disbelief. "Nelson's dead?"
"Afraid so. And he left your name and number as his local contact."
"But what happened to him?"
"Don't know. I was not at the scene. I was told to find you. My captain asked that you come to the scene and identify the body."
Bruce shot a bewildered look at Nick, who was too stunned to speak, and said,
"Well, sure. Let's go."
The officer looked at Nick and said,
"Better bring that chainsaw. We might need it."
Parked in front of the house was a green and yellow John Deere all-terrain vehicle, a Gator, a two-seater with four-wheel drive. Bruce sat in the front, shoulder to shoulder with the officer, and Nick crawled into the back. They took off, turned west, and began dodging limbs and debris in the street. They moved away from downtown, zigzagging slowly through the devastation. The damage was overwhelming. Every street was blocked with trees, limbs, downed wires, lawn furniture, boards, shingles, garbage, and standing water. Dozens of homes had been hit with limbs and branches. Only a few of the residents were outdoors, and those who were cleaning up appeared dazed. On Atlantic Avenue, a main thoroughfare to the beach, National Guardsmen were everywhere with chainsaws, picks, and axes. The street was barely passable, but the officer slowly worked the Gator through the cleanup chaos.
He said, "Looks like Paul DeSound got hit the worst. The Hilton really got hammered. Already found two bodies in the parking lot."
"How many fatalities?" Bruce asked.
3 so far. Your friend and those two, but I'm afraid there'll be more."
He turned off Atlantic and onto a narrow street that ran north and south. They weaved around thick limbs and debris, turned again, and headed east, and before long, stopped at Fernando Street, the main drag along the beachfront. More guardsmen were working to clear it. The officer stopped, and they helped shove an overturned car out of the way. 100 yards to the east, the ocean was calm. The sun was up, and already hot. Nelson Kerr lived in a 3-story row house that lined a dead-end street not far from the Hilton. The units were heavily damaged, with blown-out windows and roofs torn off. They stopped in the street and walked to a driveway where Bob Cobb was waiting. Bruce shook his hand and Bob hugged him. His eyes were bloodshot, his long gray hair disheveled.
"Rough night, partner," he said. "Should have left with the smart folks."
"Where's Nelson?" Bruce asked.
"Around back."
Nelson was lying crumpled over a short brick wall that ringed his patio. Definitely dead. He was wearing jeans, a t-shirt, old sneakers. Another policeman, a sergeant, was standing guard, obviously uncertain about what to do next. He offered a hand and said,
"This your friend?"
Bruce felt weak in the knees, but gamely stepped forward for a closer look. Nelson's head was hanging off the side of the brick wall. There was a bloody gash above his left ear. Below the body was a limb from one of several Japanese crepe myrtles. Other limbs and leaves littered the scene. Bruce stepped back and said,
"Yes, that's him."
Nick leaned closer for a look and said, "That's Nelson."
The sergeant said, "Okay. Do you guys mind staying here with the body while we get some help?"
What kind of help are you talking about? Bruce asked.
Well, I'm not sure. I guess we need the medical examiner to pronounce him dead. Just stay with him, okay?
Sure, whatever, Bruce replied.
He left your name, address, and phone number, and he also wrote down the name of some folks in California. Mr. and Mrs. Howard Kerr, I assume they're his parents.
Probably. I've never met them.
I guess we need to call them.
The sergeant looked at Bruce as if he could use some help. Bruce wanted no part of that call and said, That's your job. But the phones are down, right?
We have a satellite phone back at the staging area at Main Beach. I guess I'll get back there and make the call. I don't suppose you could do that, could you?
No, sir. I don't know those people, and it's not my job.
Okay. Y'all just stay here with the body.
Will do. Bob asked, Can we look around his house?
I guess. We'll be back as soon as we can.
The two policemen got in the gator and drove away. Bob said, These folks were a bit luckier. The surge stopped here at the front steps. I live two streets over and got 5 feet of water on the ground floor. I sat on the stairs and watched it rise. Not a good feeling. I'm sorry, Bob, Bruce said.
I wouldn't call Nelson lucky, Nick said.
Good point. They returned to the rear patio and stared at the body. Bob said,
I can't imagine what he was doing outside in the middle of the storm. A really stupid move.
Didn't he have a dog? Bruce asked. Maybe his dog got out.
He did have a dog, Bob remembered. A little black mutt, knee-high, called him Boomer. Let's find him,
Bob said as he opened the rear door.
I suppose it's prudent not to touch anything.
They stepped inside onto a wet floor in the unlit kitchen, looking for any sign of a dog.
Nick observed, If the dog was here, wouldn't we know it by now?
Probably, Bruce said. I'll check the upstairs. You guys poke around down here. 5 minutes later, every room had been checked, and there was no dog. They regrouped in the kitchen, where the heat and humidity were rising by the minute. They went out to the patio and stared at Nelson. Bruce said, We should at least cover the body.
Good idea,
Bob said, as if still in a daze. Nick found two large towels in a bathroom and gently placed them over the body. Bruce was suddenly nauseous and said, I need to sit down, fellas. Nelson had shoved 4 metal deck chairs under a table wedged in a corner of the patio, and they had not been scattered by the wind. They pulled them out, dusted off the debris, and sat in the shade 20 feet from the body. Nick found 3 bottles of warm beer in the fridge, and they toasted their dead comrade. Bruce said, You got to know him pretty well, right?
Bob replied, I guess. He moved here, what, 2 years ago?
Something like that. His 3rd novel had just been published and was selling well. He had been divorced for a few years, no kids, and wanted to get away from California. They sipped their beers and studied the white towels. Nick said,
This really doesn't make any sense. How could the dog get out in the middle of a major hurricane?
Maybe the damn thing had to pee, Bob said. Nelson let him out for a quick one. The dog got freaked out in the storm, got away, and Nelson panicked and tried to get him. That branch snapped and hit him in the head. I bet he's not the only fool who got hit by a falling limb last night.
Bad timing. Bad luck.
Bruce said, He had just finished a novel. I wonder where the manuscript is.
Wow, that's valuable stuff. Did you read it?
Nick asked. No, but I had promised to. He was just finishing the 2nd draft. As far as I know, he had not sent it to New York.
It's probably in his computer, don't you think?
More than likely.
Nick asked, What happens to it?
There was a long pause as they considered this.
Wasn't he a lawyer?
Nick asked. He was. A big firm in San Francisco, Bruce said. I'm sure he has a will, and the will appoints an executor who'll take charge of his affairs. It'll be a mess. Bob said, If he's been here for 2 years, then he's likely to be a resident of Florida.
Of course he is. He has Florida tags on his car. So wouldn't the lawyer be here?
Hell if I know.
He probably has had lawyer friends everywhere.
Nick stepped into the condo and closed the door behind him. Bob said,
"We could wait here for hours, you know. These poor cops are chasing their tails right now."
"We passed a bunch of National Guardsmen on the way over, so help has arrived.
What about your place?"
"Got lucky. Lots of downed limbs, no real damage. Nothing like around here."
Bob said, "I should have left. Now I have to rip out carpets and drywall and shovel out mud and crap. A week with no electricity. Temps in the 90s. You have plenty of food?"
"I'm okay. I have a small generator, so the beer is still cold. Come stay with me and Nick. There's food, and when it's gone, we'll go looting. Have some fun."
"Thanks."
Nick cracked the door and said, "Hey, fellas, come take a look." They walked into the den, where Nick lit a wall with a flashlight. Bob asked,
"Where'd you get that?"
"Found it on the sofa."
"Look at those specks next to the bookshelves. Could be dried blood. There's more on those books just to the right there."
Bruce took the flashlight and examined the wall. There were 8 to 10 dark specks of something. Perhaps blood, perhaps not. But whatever the substance, there was no way that Nelson or his housekeeper, if he had one, would have allowed the stains to remain where they were. Bob examined them and shook his head.
"Follow me," Nick said, and they walked down a narrow hall to the bathroom.
He lit the vanity and said, "See those pinkish stains beside the faucet? Could have been left behind by someone trying to wash away blood stains."
"You read a lot of crime novels?"
Bob asked.
"Hundreds. They're my favorite."
"So where's the bloody hand towel or rag or whatever?" Bruce asked.
"Gone. There was no electricity, but the hot water pressure would have worked until the tank ran dry. Our suspect couldn't toss the hand towel in the washing machine because it wasn't working, and it's empty now. He couldn't leave behind the evidence, so he simply left with it."
"Our suspect?" Bruce asked.
"Indulge me here. This could be serious."
"It's already serious," Bob said.
"Got that."
Bruce said, "You're thinking somebody came over here in the middle of a Category 4 hurricane, caught Nelson in the den, whacked him in the head, dragged his body outside, tried to clean up the blood, and then ran off?
Seriously?"
"Stranger things have happened," Nick said. "Actually, it was the perfect time to kill somebody and make it look accidental."
"I like it," Bob said. "But where's the blood on the floor?"
They looked at their feet. All 6 were on a wet and stained rug.
Nick said, "It's too dark in here to see anything, but what if, and again, just indulge me, but what if we're standing in the middle of a crime scene?"
Bob said, "I didn't do it, I swear." Bruce said, "Let's take a closer look at his head." They studied each other's eyes for a second, then tiptoed back to the patio. Nick took the lead and inched closer to the corpse. He lifted a towel and leaned down. The bloody gash above Nelson's left ear was sickening, and to their untrained eyes, certainly looked ghastly enough to cause death. Using the towel, and being careful not to touch him with his fingers, Nick tried to lift Nelson's head, but his neck was already stiff. Nick stood and said,
"Okay. Here's what I think we should do. Let's roll the body off and let it land on the deck. We need to see his face and the other side of his head."
Bruce said, "Not so sure about that. The cops have seen him, and they'll know we messed with the corpse."
Bob said, "I agree. I ain't touching him."
Nick said, "Okay, then we can put him back to where he is right now. But we need to see everything."
"Why?" Bruce asked. "What's your theory?"
"The killer hit him once inside and knocked him out, then dragged him out here and whacked him again, probably more than once, to finish him off."
"In the middle of the storm?" Bruce asked. "With rain coming down in sheets?"
"Exactly. The killer wasn't worried about getting wet. Don't you see? It was the perfect time to kill him."
"With what?" Bob asked.
"Exactly. With something the killer found in the apartment.
He didn't show up at the door with a gun or a knife. He got inside. Maybe it was someone Nelson knew, but sure as hell didn't know what he wanted, and he let him in because he was roaming around in a Cat 4. The guy grabbed a fire poker or a baseball bat or something he probably knew was in the apartment and used it.
You've read too many crime novels, Bob said.
You've already used that line, Nick replied.
They stood still and gawked at poor Nelson. Bruce retreated to the shade and returned to his chair. Nick and Bob slowly did the same. The sun was bearing down, the temperature getting hotter. Around them, the rescue was coming to life as more choppers buzzed about and more chainsaws were heard in the distance. It had been an hour since the cops left.
2.
Nick stood and without a word walked to the corpse, pulled off the towels, grabbed Nelson by his legs, and rolled him off the brick wall. He landed on the patio face up. Bruce and Bob hurried over for a look. His right eye was swollen shut, and there was another gash above it.
Just what I suspected, Nick mumbled to himself. Would you please get me the flashlight?
Bruce found it on the kitchen table and brought it outside. Nick took it and knelt low over the head, as if searching for lice. He found a knot on the crown of the skull, hidden by thick hair, and continued his search. When he finished, he reclined against the brick wall and said,
"Looks like the limb hit him at least 3 times. Want to explain that?"
He was looking at Bruce, who was speechless.
Bob said, Okay. Now let's put him back up there before the cops get here."
"No. The cops need to see this," Nick said. "We're talking about murder, guys, and the cops do the investigating. Or at least they're supposed to."
Bruce said, "Okay, but cover him up. I can't stand to see his face like that."
Nick gently placed the 2 towels over Nelson. Bob, who in another life had spent time in a federal prison, was nervous.
"Look, we probably left some fingerprints in there. Shouldn't we try to rub things down?"
"Hell no," Nick said. "The cops said we could go inside. If our prints are there, it's because we were there. Doesn't mean we're involved in the crime, and if we start rubbing things, we might destroy prints left by the killer."
"Good point," Bruce said. "Do you think he left the murder weapon behind?"
Nick, now the head sleuth by default, thought for a second and said,
"I doubt it. He probably fled in the storm, and it would have been easy to discard anything in this mess. But we should look around."
"I'm not going back in there," Bob said. "In fact, I'm thinking about leaving now. I need to start ripping out carpet."
"We'll help you," Bruce said.
"You can't leave," Nick said. "You found the body, and the cops will want to talk to you. They asked us to stay here."
"Right," Bruce said. "Let's stay put until they tell us to leave."
Nick said, "I'll be inside. You guys want another hot beer?"
Both nodded, and Nick brought out 2 more bottles. He left them on the patio and walked around the kitchen, careful not to touch anything. He found a dish towel and used it to open cabinets and cupboards. In the den, he noticed that the set of 4 fireplace tools was intact in the wrought iron holder. Using the flashlight and not touching the tools, he carefully examined the poker, tongs, shovel, and brush. Only the poker was a possibility. The tongs would be too unwieldy. The shovel and brush could not deliver a lethal blow, at least in his amateur opinion. With his cell phone, he took photos of the stains on the wall in the den. On the patio, Bruce asked, "Who in the world would want to kill Nelson Kerr?"
"I can't begin to imagine," Bob said.
After a long pause, he asked, "Do you really believe this, Bruce?"
"I don't know. Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves. I say we take a deep breath, wait for the cops, and let them deal with it."
"I agree. But right now they're running in circles. Hell, we're all stunned. I'm not sure we're thinking that clearly right now. I was up all night, not a wink of sleep, and scared to death. I'll be honest."
Upstairs, Nick entered the master suite, which was even darker. He opened the shades and eased around the room, touching nothing. The bed was unmade. There were clothes on the floor. Nelson kept the downstairs neat, but not his bedroom. Nick walked through the other bedroom and found nothing of interest. No more blood, no possible murder weapon. He looked in the two bathrooms, nothing. On the patio, Bob said, "You know, it's possible that he got hit by more than one limb. Look, they're all over the place. I'm not sure I'm buying this murder story."
"And the blood on the wall? Are you sure it's blood?"
"No, I'm not sure of anything, except our pal Nelson there is quite dead.
Should we move him out of the sun? Hell, he's just roasting."
"It's not bothering him. No, we're not touching him again." They sipped their hot beer and studied Nelson. The shadows were shifting, and they would soon lose their shade. In the garage, Nick found Nelson's shiny BMW sitting unscathed. An impressive rack of fishing rods covered one wall. A bag of golf clubs was in the corner. On a small workbench, Nelson had neatly arranged the usual assortment of household tools, gadgets, and supplies. Extra light bulbs, cans of insect and wasp repellent. Nothing was out of place. Indeed, his garage was tidier than his bedroom. A designer toolkit sat unopened, and Nick toyed with the idea of having a look inside. He was particularly interested in the hammer, if it hadn't been removed, but he resisted the temptation to touch it. Let the cops do that. Bob said, "There are some bad guys in his past, right? I mean, he wrote about some pretty nasty boys."
"Have you read his books?"
"Most of them. Good stuff. He got booted from his law firm, right?"
"That's always been his version. He was a partner in a big firm in San Francisco, doing well but wanting to get out, or so he says."
"Said. He found out one of his clients was selling military software to Iran and North Korea, and he blew the whistle. The feds paid him well, but his legal career was over. He took the money, lost a lot of it in a divorce, and came here to start over again. Apparently somebody was after him."
"So you're still into the murder scenario?"
"I think so. It looks pretty suspicious." Bruce sipped his beer. "You know, Bob, this is too weird. Nelson's lying here baking, and his family has no clue. You know they're worried sick. I'm sure the police will notify them now that you've identified the body."
"You would hope so, but these local boys are overwhelmed right now.
I mean, what if that was your brother lying there? Wouldn't you want to know?"
"You ever met my brother?"
"Come on, Bob." They took a sip, stared at Nelson, listened as another helicopter approached. Bob said,
"I wonder what Sherlock Holmes is doing in there."
Nick was studying the 7-iron with the flashlight. The clubs were high-end pings, a set that Nick, a serious golfer, recognized, and they were arranged in the bag in perfect order. Wedges on the bottom row, irons 4 through 9 in the middle, then the fairway woods and driver, all with matching ping head covers. Nick remembered a Scott Turow novel, Personal Injuries, in which the head of a 2-iron had been filed down to make a blade-like weapon. It landed perfectly at the base of the antihero's skull and killed him instantly. The 7-iron had not been filed or modified, but there was something on it. A liquid that had dried and perhaps a few sprigs of turf. With the flashlight in one hand, Nick took close-up shots of the clubs. He was suddenly aware that he was drenched with sweat and breathing heavily. He left the garage and returned to the patio where Bruce and Bob were still sitting, still watching Nelson. Nick removed both towels and said, "I'm taking photos of everything."
"Why?" Bob asked.
"Just to have them. Who knows?" 3. At noon, almost 2.5 hours after the cops had left, they heard something in the street. An ambulance had arrived, and 2 first responders were unloading a gurney. A downtown beat policeman who Bruce knew well met them in the driveway.
"Hello, Nat," Bruce said with a smile and a handshake. He was delighted to see a familiar face and a man in uniform.
"Hello, Bruce. What the hell you doing here?"
"Guarding the body. Guy's name is Nelson Kerr, a friend of mine.
he gave me as his contact.
I know Nelson, Nat said, stunned. He's dead?
Afraid so.
Let's have a look.
Bruce introduced Bob and Nick, and they walked to the patio, the medics behind them. Nat leaned over the corpse, pulled back one of the towels, and gawked at Nelson's face. Bruce was saying, for some reason he came out during the storm and got hit by a limb or something like that. Bob here found him lying up there on the brick wall.
Who moved him? Nat asked.
We rolled him off. Not sure the limb did the damage, Nat. It looks like he took at least 3 blows to the head. This might be more complicated than we think. Nat stood and removed his cap and looked at Bruce.
What are you talking about?
We found some spots on a wall in the den. Might be dried blood, and some stains in a sink that could also be blood. Nick said, it's a homicide, officer. Someone hit Nelson over the head inside, dragged him out, finished him off, and tried to make it look like storm damage.
In the middle of a hurricane?
Yes, sir. The perfect time to kill someone.
And who are you?
Nick Sutton. I work at the bookstore. Bob said, he thinks he's Sherlock Holmes, but he might be onto something. Nat was not equipped to deal with situations like this. He paced around for a moment, scratching his head, and finally said,
okay, show me the blood.
Nick took him inside. Bruce asked one of the medics, so what's happening on the island?
Chaos. The National Guard is clearing roads. They just found 3 dead folks under a beach cottage just up the road here. The body count is 7 so far. Thankfully, most folks left the island.
The second medic said,
most of the flood water has receded, but they're still 2 feet downtown.
I own Bay Books on Main. I suppose it was flooded.
About 5 feet, sir.
Bruce shook his head, mumbled, and said,
well, it could have been worse.
Nat followed Nick out of the condo and pulled out his radio. He disappeared around the side and talked to someone privately. Bruce asked the first medic, any phone service? He shook his head.
All the cell towers were knocked out. It could be days. Y'all really think he was murdered?
Nick said,
either that or that same limb hit him 3 times in the head. Which limb?
Bruce pointed, and the medic strained to look. Nat returned with a purpose and said,
okay. I talked to my lieutenant, and he said, don't touch the body. He's trying to find our homicide guy.
I didn't know we had a homicide guy, Bruce said.
I can't remember the last murder on Camino Island.
Nat said,
it's Hoppy Durden. He also does bank robberies.
I can't remember the last bank robbery. He's not very busy.
Bruce said, look, Nat, might I suggest you guys contact the state police and get an investigator in here?
Sir, you're confused. Right now, no one is coming onto the island. The bridge is closed and all roads are blocked. We're trying to get injured folks off the island.
I get that, but at some point, real soon, the bridge will open so the cleanup crews can get in, then the homeowners.
Just stay in your lane, sir. Somebody else is in charge of that.
His radio squawked and he stepped away again. The medics were called to another emergency, and so Bruce, Bob, and Nick were again sitting in the sun on the patio, watching Nelson roast. Thankfully, Nat had covered him again with the towels. The officer returned to the patio, said he had been called away, and instructed the 3 to remain with the body and don't touch anything, and he would try and find Hoppy, but he was probably busy somewhere else. It was all hands on deck, and the right hand had no idea what the left hand was doing. Luckily, Hoppy Durden arrived 15 minutes later. Bruce knew who he was, but had never met him. As far as he knew, Hoppy spent no time in his bookstore. He was a large man with an ample belly, and his sweaty uniform stuck to his skin. Introductions were made, and Bruce outlined their murder theory. Hoppy looked at Nelson's wounds as if he'd seen dozens of murder victims, then followed Nick into the condo, which was as hot as a sauna. When they emerged, Hoppy flung sweat from his forehead and said,
Looks like this might be a crime scene.
He was noticeably excited. With a real murder in the works, he had the perfect excuse to avoid more chainsaw duty down along the beach. He got his camera and began taking photos of Nelson. He strung yellow crime scene tape around the back patio, down the drive, across the front yard, and along the flower beds. Bruce wanted to ask why so much yellow tape was needed when there was no one around. He had several questions and even more suggestions, but decided to keep them to himself. Hoppy kept calling for backup, but no one else arrived. Using his phone, he video recorded brief statements from Bruce, Bob, and Nick. He asked them to please stay out of the condo. As Hoppy went about his business, he offered them bottles of cold water from his cooler. They drained them. Bob was finally excused and left to deal with his flood damage. Bruce and Nick promised to come help as soon as possible. The same medics returned with their gurney and loaded up Nelson. Hoppy explained that he would be taken to the city hospital where there was a small morgue in the basement. Bruce said, "I thought the hospital was evacuated."
"It is, but it has a generator."
"Who does the autopsy?" Bruce asked. After spending half an hour with Hoppy, he was not feeling good about the investigation.
"Well, assuming we do one, I guess it'll be the state medical examiner."
"Come on, Officer Durden. There has to be an autopsy. If this is a murder, you have to know the cause of death, right?" Hoppy rubbed his chin and eventually nodded yes. Bruce pushed, but not too aggressively. "Why not just load him up and take him to the crime lab in Jacksonville? That's where they do autopsies, right?"
"Yes, I know the examiner there." "You may be right. We can probably pull some strings and get off the island without much trouble and drive down to Jacksonville."
"And we need to make sure his family in California is notified," Bruce said.
"Can you do that for me? I need to get back to the staging area."
"Sorry, that's your job."
"Right."
Hoppy followed the gurney down the driveway to the ambulance. Bruce and Nick watched as they loaded it and drove away.